Most tax pros leave a message.
It's Jane. I'm moving on to a TurboTax expert who beat your price. Adam Devine, tell him how I feel.
Hey, tax pro, she's been thinking twice. Just believe TurboTax will beat your price. This is a tax break.
Switch to a TurboTax Live expert and we'll beat what you paid your pro last tax season. Make the switch at TurboTax.com/beat your price. TurboTax full service only. Sign up by 12/20/2024 and file by 4/1/2025. Full details at TurboTax.com/beat your price.
I'm Candace Lim.
And I'm Nadira Goff, and you're listening to ICYMI.
In case you missed it.
Slate's podcast about internet culture.
And today we are playing High Speed Downloads, a game where Nadira and I tell you everything you need to know about the biggest internet stories of late. But first, I do think we need to talk about something that shocked us both this week. Earlier this week, Reuters reported that Liam Payne, one of the band members of One Direction, died after a fall from a hotel room balcony in Buenos Aires, Argentina. Payne was 31. He had recently been a topic of internet conversation because he went to fellow bandmate Niall Horan's concert in Argentina. And this news has hit quite strongly with the timeline, from Directioners dealing with this mass grief to the tragedy of the circumstance. Payne was quite young. He had a 7-year-old son. And soon after his death, TMZ allegedly obtained a photo of his body and posted a cropped portion of it on their website. There are still a lot of questions left unanswered, considering its early days since this news broke. But Nadira, talk to me about what you've observed or maybe even felt in the past few days.
At first, the news was a little disorienting simply because it was really unclear if it was true, which is not necessarily something that's uncommon with celebrity tragedies on the internet in recent years, but still, I don't know, just never gets easier and is still always confusing when it's unclear what's going on. But then mainstream US sources started reporting it and it became disorienting for obviously different reasons. And then there was the TMZ confirmation with the truly disgusting, unethical cropped photos of Liam's corpse with no content warning. And that caused an entire discourse online. And it was a mess and upsetting and really shocking. And I think besides his youth and what the group meant to me and my friends and plenty of people our age, it was just such a short and abrupt end to what seemed like a potentially hopeful future for the bandmates overall, particularly in the sense that there was a heavily rumored reunion that seemed to potentially be on the horizon, maybe in the next coming years. But it's also complex because of the allegations Liam's ex-fiance Maya Henry had made about him and their relationship shortly before his death.
Yeah. So I think you're right that this will be a very complex one for Directioners to grieve, because not only is this probably one of the first boy band deaths that they are experiencing, but also there were circumstances prior to this that were already getting unwieldy. In short, the Daily Mail reported that about a week before his death, Payne's ex-fiance, as you mentioned, Maya Henry, had issued a cease and desist following obsessive contact. And Henry went public with these allegations. And for a few days, the tide seemed to turn on Payne. Like, people were calling his behavior abusive. They were examining other public evidence, such as Henry, she wrote a book. It's fiction, but in her words, it's, quote, definitely inspired by true events. And it was this kind of lightly veiled depiction of their relationship. And in the book, the Payne counterpart is physically violent. He forces his girlfriend to get an abortion or he'll break up with her, and like so much more.
Yeah, the Maya Henry stuff was really distressing. But then at the same time, there were also the rumors going around somewhat retconning his friendship with the bandmates. And I mean, since they disbanded, Liam has been a complex figure in the public eye, whether he was opening up about his issues with substance abuse or making confusing comments about not letting Harry Styles dress his son. But I think with the more recent allegations from Maya Henry and the fan theories, things started to get even more complicated. And now the internet is tasked with trying to have a nuanced conversation about his life and his death without getting weird or gross about his past, both confirmed and alleged. And unfortunately, the internet has just never once risen to that challenge. Mm-hmm. So on one hand, it's nice to see a lot of directioners coming together for the first time in years to commiserate and lean on each other for support. But it's equally awful to see, for example, some more distraught fans harassing Maya in comments on social media.
Yeah, exactly. Because people online are already putting together this narrative, this timeline that she is somehow involved. And blaming a woman, let alone the victim of a beloved celebrity's alleged abusive behavior, is just not new. We've been there before, and we're unfortunately still there. And I get the sense that the internet is about to get even more vile for not only Henry, but the people around Payne, including his former bandmates. And it just sucks. I'm sad. Honestly, I highly recommend reaching out to the directioners in your life, because what I really needed was to, like, get off Twitter, stop doom scrolling, hang out with my friends, and, like, acknowledge it but not talk about it the whole night. And I had two friends reach out to me. We hung out, watched the Dodgers game, and that really helped.
Yeah, I did the same thing. And even at the bar when I was talking to my friends and we were, you know, just discussing the whole thing, we kind of made the same point you did, which is the cycle is not new, as you point out. I specifically think of when the entire internet blamed Ariana Grande after Mac Miller's death. Yeah. And there are so many unfortunate examples of the same thing happening. And I can say for anyone who is online and is feeling really trapped in their emotions, specifically with the cycle of rumors and news and everything happening online, that you're totally right. Just reaching out to people, getting outside, doing something fun, trying to take your mind off of it, or at least if you don't want to take your mind off of it, find solace in other people that you can actually talk to, that you can hug, that you can be near. I think that that is always more effective and productive than doom scrolling or, unfortunately, getting bogged down by making or reading hate comments for other people on the internet.
Yeah. Well, Nadira, I really appreciate speaking to you about this as a colleague and a friend. So let's do the same for our listeners and maybe bring some like lighter counter programming. Because on today's episode, we're playing High Speed Downloads. So let's take a break. When we come back, Nadira and I will tell you everything you need to know about the biggest news hitting the K-pop world and why Bath & Body Works is under fire for a controversial candle. This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. You chose to hit play on this podcast today. Smart choice. Progressive loves to help people make smart choices. That's why they offer a tool called Auto Quote Explorer that allows you to compare your Progressive car insurance quote with rates from other companies. So you save time on the research and can enjoy savings when you choose the best rate for you. Give it a try after this episode at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy. Progressive loves to help people make smart choices. Whether you're listening to ICYMI at double speed or regular speed, you'd probably love to know how you can get more cash back on your credit card. Either way, we'll slow things down a bit so you don't miss anything. Discover automatically doubles all the cash back you've earned on your credit card at the end of your first year with Cashback Match. That means with Discover, you could turn $150 cash back to $300. It pays to Discover. See terms at discover.com/credit card. Hey, listeners. Hope you're enjoying today's show. If this is your first time listening, then welcome. We are thrilled to have you here. In case you missed it, our show comes out twice a week on Wednesdays and Saturdays. So make sure you never miss an episode like this past Wednesdays when Slate writer Luke Winky attempted the 24-hour sardine fast made popular by Dr. Boz with unexpected results. And we're back. Nadira, we're about to play our first round of High Speed Downloads. You our star player. But for those who are joining us for the first time, High Speed Downloads is a game where we each have exactly 1 minute to explain some internet hijinks. And Nadira, you're going to go first. What are you going to be telling me about for your first High Speed Download?
So there's always massive drama in the K-pop world. I would say right now, globally, there are two huge scandals happening. One, the ongoing uncertainty of the future of the group NewJeans, and then the one I'll be recapping for you today, which is all about the recent return and swift second exit of Sungun, a former member of the boy group RISE.
All right. Nadira, are you ready? Here we go. In 3, 2, 1.
So RISE is a new fifth-gen K-pop boy group that debuted in 2023 with 7 members ages 19 to 22 years old. Their debut was huge, really successful. About 2 months after their debut, photos of the member Sungun were leaked that showed him cozying up with and kissing a girl, presumably when he was a trainee. And another leaked photo of him smoking. Dating as a trainee? Big no-no. But also, Korean culture is a bit more conservative, so small but mighty contingent of RISE fans say enough is enough, he's ruining RISE's reputation, kick him out. So SM Entertainment, their management group, puts him on hiatus, which is the kiss of death in K-pop. And for 10 long months, pro Sungun fans are protesting, chanting RISE's 7 in the streets and boycotting their future releases until SM brings Sungun back. SM announces on Friday the 11th that it worked. He's coming back and everyone's happy, including the other members, except the small but vocal anti-Sungun fans, who through social media organize a very effective tactical protest where they send 1,000 funeral wreaths to SM's building as if to say he might as well be dead or, unfortunately, go die. And it works. In less than 48 hours, SM and Sungun release a statement that he will exit the group. Now international fans are pissed and they've started unfollowing the group, and international K-pop merch sellers are joining together and refusing to buy and sell RISE merchandise in a massive protest.
Okay, Nadira, right in the 60 seconds. Very good job. This is very meaty, but you get one more sentence. What is it?
So there is an update from SM. They posted it on October 17th, announcing that they'll be taking legal action against defamation of RISE and Sungun from online accounts. The statement for Sungun partially reads, "We would like to reiterate that impersonating acquaintances on social media to write false information that damages the artist's character and reputation and maliciously reproducing and indiscriminately spreading such false information are clear criminal acts. We are taking immediate legal action whenever any legal activities related to Sungun are confirmed, and we will continue to respond firmly without settlements or leniency. We thank all the fans who support Sungun, and we will continue to do our best to protect our artists." End statement. But they release separate statements that basically say the same thing for RISE and Sungun. And in the one for RISE, where they're listing the members, they don't name Sungun. And everyone is kind of like, so you admit that it's bullying, and yet you caved into it so easily.
Okay, this is interesting. I mean, you are so in this world. I'm so curious, what do you think? Because I feel like there's a lot of layers here.
So first of all, I should say, I don't think there's anything wrong with being a teenage boy and having a girlfriend. And I do think of the two infractions, that's the one that people are most upset about, to be honest, the small contingent that is upset. I do think that's where most of their ire comes from. I'm honestly mostly shocked by how unprecedented this entire thing has been. I can't understate how massive of a win his return felt. There were accounts on Twitter saying, "My whole timeline is celebrating, and I'm not even a fan of RISE or K-pop," because it just is so rare for someone to be brought back from something like a hiatus. And I think this is also shown in the fact that the streaming numbers for the group's music went up and their followers went up. And again, he really did nothing wrong. But then the question is also bubbling up about, if that was unprecedented, what precedent is SM setting by letting toxic fans basically be influential enough to make such massive decisions for a group? What will this empower fans to do, and particularly toxic fans to do, in the future for other groups? And so there's, I don't know, just a lot of really interesting conversations being had that are spurred on by this whole controversy, which I think has once again bubbled up outside of Korea and is now involving a lot of international fans and companies. And then also that has bubbled up to, I don't know, bring into question other groups outside of just RISE.
Yeah, because, I mean, they essentially got someone fired, which is kind of hilarious, but also really scary, because unfortunately, I do think K-pop stans are that type of contingent where, like, they are your best client and you kind of have to appease them. But at the same time, it's like, how many of them hate them? Do we need to do, like, some studies on this? I mean, what else have you been seeing just from that side of it, like on Twitter, for example?
So I would say that in terms of fans who support him or people who are interested in this as a K-pop news story, there's been a lot of interesting conversations. The first one being a question about what role does management have to play in the protection of artists who are essentially their employees? Like you said, essentially they got him fired. And I think that that question expands beyond K-pop and beyond just SM to any label or entertainment company that has artists that are signed to them. And then there's another question about whether or not society's treatment of idols, specifically in Korea, or idol culture specifically in Korea, is too conservative and constricting. Generally, the question is, what did he do that was so wrong? And why do you feel that him being a teenager and smoking a cigarette or having a girlfriend is, I don't know, enough reason to send funeral wreaths to his office, basically, which is just a horrible, horrible thing to do. And I've seen this discussed even on TikTok accounts that have nothing to do with K-pop that are just like, oh, wow, I recently found out about this story. Let me tell you what's going on. But I think it's also nice to see solidarity from other stan accounts. So especially on Twitter, there was something of a copypasta going on from accounts that were like, I know this isn't about Justin Bieber or Taylor Swift, but let's support RIZE's fandom who are going through this difficult time right now. Let's show solidarity. The hashtag SM supports bullying has been trending. Mm-hmm. And now everyone's wondering, will this work, right? If the very small but mighty faction of fans that disliked Sungin were successful, will a strong showing from international fans and people just concerned about entertainment culture writ large, will that be just as successful?
Yeah.
I guess the other thing that I'm constantly thinking about is the fact that these trainee machines and this K-pop entertainment machine is a machine. These kids become trainees so young. So when they don't debut, sometimes I get really concerned about what marketable skills they have in the real world, if they're never going to break out into a group. And they're not all guaranteed to break out into a group. And so the fact that there was this young boy who's very talented and that he finally debuted and he broke out into this group, and to be unsure about his future and his future, not just in entertainment, but just in life, like his future in the workforce generally, I think is really upsetting. But it's nice to see solidarity. It's nice to see it go beyond just the K-pop circle or K-pop bubble. And so I think for a lot of reasons, it's actually just a really interesting culture story, and I'll definitely keep my eyes on it. And I don't know, I guess I'll end by saying RIZE is 7.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and until K-pop stars can unionize, we will stay on that beat. Should we move on?
Let's move on and turn to another big company doing bad things. Mm-hmm. Candice, what will you be telling me about today?
It brings me much sadness to ask the question, Nadira. Have you heard about the Bath & Body Works KKK candle?
No. But I guess I'm about to. Uh-huh. Are you ready? You've got 1 minute on the clock. In 3, 2, 1. Go.
So Bath & Body Works has been gearing up for their winter stock. This is when they pull out the cinnamon sugared pecans, the fresh balsam, the semi-annual sales, and it's the holidays. They're huge. Moneymakers, all eyes on Bath. Now they have a scent called Snowed In. It has notes of buttermilk, musk, vanilla. The container of the candle shows like a portion of a snowflake, which we all know has holes and divots and whatever in a repeating pattern. But when you look at the snowflake on this candle, the holes have been placed in such a way that they resemble KKK masks because snowflakes have points on them. So these look like two holes with a pointed hood several times. This is bad. It had already hit the shelves. The Bath & Body Works subreddit had already taken photos. So when the company pulled it off the shelf, it was too late. As reported on by Jacqueline Pizer for the Washington Post, the company is saying that this was, quote, unintentional. And they, quote, apologize to anyone we've offended and are swiftly working to have this item removed and are evaluating our process going forward, end quote. Which I find to be odd, because if you're not offended, why are you shopping at my store? Anyway, employees on the subreddit are saying, like, we have to throw them away. We don't want to see the labels. They're probably going to redesign them, sell them at an outlet. But what's hilarious? They're selling them on eBay. They're selling them on eBay.
You packed a lot in there. It's a lot to process for me personally. So before I give my thoughts, I'm actually dying to hear your one more sentence.
So I mentioned they were selling them on eBay, which is true. They're going for like $180 to $360, but this is where I draw the line. Guys, they're calling it the clandle. They're calling it the clandle. I am so upset. Nadira, I do want to hear your reaction to this, though, because listeners, I am showing Nadira a photo of this candle as we speak. What do we think?
Like, I get the intention. I get the vision that someone had. But at what point do you just not have anyone in that conference room seeing this design and saying, hey, guys, maybe not? You know, like, at what point, whose failure is this really is my question. Like, how far up the chain do we place our blame?
Yeah. And you know what really doesn't help? A candle notoriously meant to be lit up. I don't know if it helps to be lit up.
You're right.
This is like horrible, horrible, horrible. They are dealing with it. And I did not buy these candles. Let me be very clear. I did not buy any of these products. Okay.
Did you see them?
No, I didn't. The situation is that I literally was at Bath & Body Works days before this story happened. And I was shocked. I was like, first off, how did I not notice this? But second, geez, literally, geez.
I kind of want to know how it smells. Like, I want to know if the smell is really giving, because I want to know about the possibility of, or just how many people secretly bought it and just removed the label and were like, no, this is my candle. It smells so great.
Okay, well, the worst
part is, no one knows when they visit their house for dinner or whatever that it's a candle.
I mean, the worst part is, what if they smell it? They don't remove the label. They don't remove the label. Mm-hmm. Christmas ruined.
I also want a reported feature. Yes, a feature on all of the people who have spent over, I don't know, $40 to $50 on this candle via eBay. Like, did you say something about the 300s?
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, reportedly going up to 360.
What would you do if you entered someone's home and they were like, oh, hey, look, this is my candle. Isn't that so funny? There was this whole Bath & Body Works situation and I bought it off eBay for $360. What would you do?
What would I do, John Quiñones? I mean, the first thing I'd say is I do sense racism in the room tonight. But the second thing I'd say is you clearly have horrible personal finance. $360 when this is $26.75 and SAS is coming up 75% off and you can't strike a deal.
So your first response is, I think you need to look inward. And your second response is, after you do that, I think you need to look for an accountant.
Because you can't do both. I'm sorry. You can't do both. Okay?
You can't do both.
Anyway, look, I've learned so much in so little time. But what if I told you, Nadira, that we have more to say, more to talk about? And we should do that right after this break. When we come back, Nadira and I are going to talk about that time we all went to the club and became fam, and why you shouldn't trust a restaurant with your cake. All that and more after the break. Whether you're listening to ICYMI at double speed or regular speed, you'd probably love to know how you can get more cash back on your credit card. Either way, we'll slow things down a bit so you don't miss anything. Discover automatically doubles all the cash back you've earned on your credit card at the end of your first year with Cashback Match. That means with Discover, you could turn $150 cash back to $300. It pays to discover. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible. Financial geniuses. Monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it. So your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states and situations.
This episode is brought to you by United Airlines. When you want to make the most of your vacation, book with United. They're an airline that cares about your travels as much as you do. United is transforming the flying experience with Bluetooth connectivity, screens, power at every seat, and bigger overhead bins to help fit everyone's bag. And with their app, you can skip the bag check line, get live updates, and more. Change the way you fly. Book your next trip today at united.com.
And we're back. Okay, Nadira, you were up again. What is your second high-speed download of the day?
Hey, Candace, did you know that in the club, we all fam?
the way. I cannot escape this sound on TikTok or at work. Okay, Nadira, are you ready? In 3, 2, 1.
In 2016, the comedy show Broad City, oh, it's happening. The city is indeed broad. There's a clip where the show stars Alana Glazer and Abby Jacobson are at a club, and Alana says hi to some random girls. Why? Not because she knows them, no, but because, as she states, in the club, we all fam. It's hard to trace origins of resurfacing trends on TikTok, but as far as we can tell, this clip reemerges in the public consciousness because of a talk from comedian slash actress slash content creator Maggie Winters lip-syncing to it with TikToker Connor Wood. Now, everyone is using it, some to talk about how much they love their church congregation, some hilariously using it at Hibachi dinner with strangers being like, in the club of this here Benihana, we are all indeed fam. But most often, I've seen it employed as a joking way to explain what it's like being older and trying to cringely relate to younger generations. Sabrina Carpenter even got in on it with a viral video that had the caption, my 30-year-old fans trying to talk to my 12-year-old fans. But now it's starting to get detached from its origins, evidenced by a tweet from one of my all-time favorite accounts, Bolu Babalola, who says, quote, they're calling these broad city lines TikTok speak in the quotes, guys. This is a nightmare. My culture is not a costume. Halloween is coming up. Be conscious. Listen and learn.
I weirdly have a lot to say about this, but Nadira, you do get one more sentence.
I think we just have to play the original clip because not only is it delightful, but it's also kind of interesting to see how things like Bolu was saying in her tweet get distilled until the point where their origins aren't legible or easily tangible anymore.
Dude, I think they know we're crashing. Watch this. Hey!
Hey!
Do you know them?
No, but in DeClerb, we all fam.
What?
In DeClerb, we all fam.
I don't, in the club, we are all family. Are you racist?
Candace, you said you had tons of thoughts. What be they?
Yeah, I mean, I remember when I first heard this on TikTok, I didn't know it was from Broad City. And so once I made that connection, I was like, hey, this is awesome. Alana Glazer, Abby Jacobson, get your residuals. We need it. And then this mutation started, let us say, where I feel like it got more and more unfunny as the days went on. And I don't think it's because people were like using it incorrectly or they were like being cheesy with it. There is just something about the way that TikTok ages media and sounds that feels so impermanent, and it feels so odd, but I can't figure out, is it like denigrating the original like thing that Broad City was trying to say about it? Is it that people are co-opting it in a way that's just like not funnier than the original context? I don't know, but I guess the question I'm asking is, do you like this? Do you like this phrasing and this cloud that has become of it?
I do like the phrasing. I too was not someone who watched Broad City, and so I didn't know that this came from Broad City. It's kind of funny because going back to the original clip, there were so many comments that were like, oh my god, Broad City is one of my favorite shows, and I love, this is my favorite scene or my favorite quote, and I was like, I never would have known if you didn't comment that. But I do think that you're pointing out something that is very fascinating about media, and I really like the point that you make about the speed with which TikTok ages things and the sort of cycle that we go through of things that are trendy and how the period of trendiness becomes ever so shorter. I think what I like about this, besides the fact that I actually do just say clerb and I have been saying clerb for years now, I don't know why, I don't know where, but I have. So besides that, I kind of like that it inherently is already a joke. So on the scale of demure to crash out to in the club we all fam, in terms of things that everyone has been saying this year because of social media, in the club we all fam is the only thing that it never started out serious. It was always a joke. And I think that in that way, it's fun to just watch the different takes on it. Like, it really is hilarious and very relatable to be at a hibachi-type dinner and to have the sentiment of in the club we all fam. Because if you have ever been to a hibachi dinner, you do know that for those 45 minutes to an hour and a half, you become family with the random people sitting beside you as you try to catch shrimp that someone is tossing to you through the air. And so I kind of love all the different takes on this trend and the way that people have been relating it to real life experiences I wouldn't have even thought of. But I also think that Bolu's point is really interesting and your point is really interesting about what does it mean to have something become so popular that it then becomes detached from its roots, or you're not as easily able to reach for its origins. And I think that in some ways, that is just an inevitability of virality today. I think that's why sites like Know Your Meme exist, but people aren't going to be checking them when something is immediately popping up or popping off. So we have the tools in place culturally to try and stave that off a bit, but I don't know. I think it's just going to happen. And so I kind of like that even Bully's tweet pointing out that its origins had become detached was also a joke in of itself. Like the line where she says, my culture is not a costume, is really funny. And I think it's also kind of a wink, wink, nudge, nudge as to, I see this happening. I want to correct this. But at the same time, it was bound to happen anyway.
Yeah. I also am realizing that something I often do with TikTok sounds that are not music is I kind of analyze them from this angle of like, what's the longevity of this? How long do I have to endure more and more in the club we're all fams until it stops and something new comes along? And I feel like I do that a lot with music of being like, okay, this little Billie Eilish song, how long will you be in Ryan Seacrest American Top 40? And the maybe like sad part of that is being like, the reason this line is funny is because someone really good wrote it. They got paid to work on this show and they wrote a funny line because they're funny. And I'm always curious what their perspective is when like something they worked on like 8 years ago all of a sudden comes back into the zeitgeist, but it's not actually their intent. And it might not even be the message they're sending. And so whoever wrote that line would love to hear from you, would love a reach out. I'd love to hear about how the resurgence of the six words you wrote one day in a Google Doc, how it feels to see those alive again. But until then, I don't know, Nadira, like, do you think like when we're in the club, we're all fam?
Yeah, I think in this club of ICYMI recordings, we are all fam.
In the club of the ICU, we are all fam. Say that.
Okay, I think we've let that run its course. We'll see how long it takes for the internet to do the same. But Candace, if I'm correct, you have our last high-speed download of the episode.
Mm-hmm.
And this one, I've been waiting for ICYMI to talk about. So let the listeners know what they're about to hear.
Today, I will be talking about the guy on TikTok who made a cake and brought it to a restaurant and something happened to the cake?
Let's do it because I have thoughts. All right. 60 seconds on the clock, starting in 3, 2, 1, go.
Ryan Ortimer is a New York City cook and influencer with more than 300,000 followers on TikTok. He went viral because a few weeks ago he went to a restaurant for his friend's birthday. He made his friend a funfetti birthday cake. It took him 5 or 6 hours to make. He calls the restaurant. He's like, hi, I'm bringing this cake. Is it okay if I cut the cake myself? The restaurant says, no, we need to cut it because it's a safety hazard. And he's like, okay. So they go to the restaurant. It's cake time. They bring it out. Light the candles. Sing. They take the cake back into the kitchen. They slice it up. But when they slice it up, Ryan and his friends are like suspicious. They're like, excuse me, this cake was huge and you sliced us 12 very, very small slices. Ryan believes only half the cake was served to him, so he asks the waiter, where's the cake? And they tell him there's no cake left, and they leave the restaurant, no more cake. He's upset. In the TikTok, Ryan's like, okay, so I'm pretty sure that this high-end New York City Midtown Steakhouse took the cake back into the kitchen, cut a few slices for us, and then they ate the rest. He thinks they ate the cake, so he posts this on TikTok, more than 10 million views. People are like, you need to call the manager, call the manager. What's funny, though, internet, not as forgiving. People are like, you need to have a mean friend, because guess what? They're lying to you. They're lying to you. And I think the internet is right.
Okay, Candace, nicely done. What is your bonus sentence?
So, Ryan in all of his videos, he never tells us what the restaurant is, which I think classy move. You know, you're a food influencer, chef. Keep the bridges intact. But obviously the internet's smarter than that. So the internet is like, I think this is Quality Meats, the restaurant in Midtown. So what are they doing? Of course they're going on to Quality Meats Insta, all social media. They are commenting in every single photo. Who ate the cake? I know a birthday cake. Hate to see your staff coming. Where's the statement? And they are just getting slapped like left and right on their socials. Once again, even though Ryan did not name the place. And so Quality Meats, they had to talk to people.com. Ryan did confirm this information, which is that they've been in touch. They invited him for like a comped meal for two people back at the restaurant. And they also said that there were indeed two slices of cake left, but they really maintained that their staff did not eat the cake, which really brings us to the question, so where's the cake? Which to this day, unanswered, Nadira.
I don't even know where to start because honestly, the story makes me a little irate and I don't even like cake that much. I'm someone who famously is somewhat of a cake hater. Like, I'll eat it, but I'd always prefer a birthday pie or a birthday stack of donuts. However, if somebody fixed their mouth to eat my cake, whether it was store-bought, but especially if it was made by a friend with love and care and expensive ingredients and camera work because they made a TikTok about it and love and care, I would be beside myself, beset. I would be upset on my birthday, no less. Absolutely not. And I do feel as though I am that friend who I'm usually nice, I'm usually flowery, I'm usually dancing in a field of sunflowers or whatever. Howstever, if I showed up to a dinner and there was a massive cake and we got paper thin slices and someone went back and was like, can we have the rest of the cake? And they were like, JK, there's none left. I would turn into the Hulk so fast. I would be asking questions as if I was interrogating someone who, I don't even know, stole my car and committed, like, I don't know, arson. I have no idea. I would be on the verge of committing felonies. And so therefore, I do kind of agree with the internet stance that every friend group needs a mean friend. Or if not a mean friend, because I'm not necessarily that, someone who can get buck when it's time to get buck. Right. You know what I mean? Like, right. If there are injustices happening, you need someone in the friend group who can stand up to said injustices. But I do think what is more interesting to me than the dynamic of this person's friend group and the fact that no one seemed to be asking that many questions about this cake is your question of what happened to the cake. So they said that there were only two slices left. And I'm kind of thinking it seemed like there should have been more than two slices left if everyone had paper thin slices. But then in addition to that, I also saw some sort of early reports or comments from the restaurant when I was seeing this on my social media feeds that were like, we don't know, we think it got lost or something. And I'm kind of like, how do you lose a cake? There is foul play at work here. And I think my boy Ryan deserves more than just a comped meal for two people. Like, I think reparations are due and we have not fully seen or reached the reparations he is owed yet. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I'm going to say something that may come off as something the mean friend of the group would say, but as we are all learning today, everyone needs one. I thought it was really interesting that the internet didn't come for Ryan, the influencer guy, because for a hot second, I was like, how is this going to turn on him? And I kind of thought about it for a second and I was like, what is the moment in the timeline where things should have changed, like where someone should have asked some more questions? Because the vibe I'm kind of getting is that Ryan's a little non-confrontational because he's saying that there were so many moments, literally from the phone call all the way up to like leaving the restaurant, that like red flag, red flag, red flag. And he doesn't really push enough to get said cake back. And I wonder if the response to being like a non-confrontational person is like posting it on TikTok. Because I do think, like, as you're saying, injustice was had, so let's make some justice. And what's kind of funny to me is, like, if he's not going to name the restaurant, what exactly was he hoping to achieve by posting all of this on TikTok? Yeah, because I'm kind of with you where I'm like, even if the restaurant came back to me and said, hey, comp dinner for two, I'm with you. Where I'm like, well, there were 12 of us.
Right.
And there was a cake.
And there was a
cake. So I would like 12 of us to have a cake.
I wonder if maybe he was hoping just for some validation that he wasn't, I don't know, a little bit sensitive or unreasonable. Because I think for a lot of non-confrontational people, they definitely have this inner dialogue that's like, oh, well, maybe I'm in the wrong. Like, maybe asking these questions wouldn't be okay or would be beyond the pale, or maybe I'm just causing trouble and, you know, maybe this restaurant is really swamped or something like that. And so maybe what he was sort of secretly looking for is validation from people on the internet saying, oh no, you deserve to get your lick back because what happened to the cake that you so lovingly made? And so I do think he definitely got that, and that's interesting. I will also say that this particular situation caused quite a colorful discussion in our Slate Slack channel, and I won't out anyone specifically, but I learned something new about my coworkers that day. I did. I did.
You're like, you're not invited. You're not invited to the year-end party. It's not happening. There will be no cake.
I also learned that some people were really confused about the processes of bringing a cake to a dinner. And I don't know, maybe it's just because I come from a big family, or maybe it's because this is a Philly thing or a particular like Black culture thing. I don't know. But usually when we go to a birthday dinner, because there's always a lot of us, you know, everyone has their favorite cake person, or there's really well-known cake places in the neighborhood. So we will bring a cake from an outside place. And yes, some restaurants may have a cutting fee that you have to pay because they won't let you cut the cake yourself. But you usually pay the cutting fee. And then there were people who were saying, well, why would you bring a cake to a party? And I'm just kind of like, what do you mean? You just, like, if there's more cake, you just put it back in the box. Like, everyone has been to a birthday party where there's been leftover cake, right? This isn't new. But no, it was new to some people. They were really confused about the idea of bringing a cake, an outside cake, to a birthday dinner. And I would just like to let everyone listening to this know that that's perfectly okay.
Yeah. Here's what I'm going to say. And it actually might be quite unhinged. So, Nadira, I do need you to check me on this after.
Yes.
Nadira, if you are ever in a Rhine-coded situation where, like, you think something's wrong, like, you literally think someone mishandled your cake or that they're lying about your cake, here's what you do. I'm not saying that I've done this before, but I am just saying that sometimes when I'm looking for the restroom, I push through the wrong door and I end up looking at French fries. I'm just saying that you could, technically, in this country, walk into the kitchen and think it's the bathroom and think it's the bathroom and just kind of like look around like, where's the bathroom? And you clock your cake. And if you see employees eating your cake, case closed, sue them. However, if you take a little gander because you're like, oh, I actually heard the bathroom's at the back of the kitchen. It's at the back of the kitchen. You keep walking and you look for your cake. It's probably in the fridge. So you just open the fridge, thought this was the bathroom. And then at some point, someone will be like, hi, sir, don't do this. And you'll be like, I was just so confused. Someone told me the bathroom was in the back of the sink. Da, 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 da. And then you will find your cake.
Okay, first of all, the number of times I've accidentally walked into a kitchen because I was going to some fuck-ass speakeasy where the door is, like, past the kitchen, and so I'm like, why am I in an industrial kitchen right now? And it's because I missed the door for the speakeasy because it was behind a fucking bathroom stall or some shit. So anyway, it's not hard to walk into the kitchen of a restaurant. I will validate you on that. However, I do feel like, as women of color, there are certain lines we just can't cross. There are certain things that are dangerous for us. There are certain rules we just shouldn't break. And something about walking into the kitchen of a restaurant that you know you're not supposed to be in feels like dangerous territory for us. It feels like we should maybe not do that. It feels like, I don't know, I just feel as though I need more information, more lies specifically, about what happened to my cake before I start committing crimes. And I don't know if illegally entering a restaurant's kitchen that you're not supposed to be in is a crime, but it feels like one. And so before I enter the kitchen, I would need someone to tell me like 3 times to my face that they can't find my cake. Because then I'm walking into the kitchen and I will walk right past you to do so. However, I need the reasoning, I need the why to be strong enough before I get to that step. But I will say, if you ever find yourself in a kitchen because you thought that the staff ate your cake and you were thrown out of said restaurant and perhaps put in handcuffs because unclear if it's a crime or not, I would bail you out.
And here's my final 2 cents. Number one, Nadira is right. Maybe just send your mean friend to do it.
Yes.
You know? But second, maybe always bring an apron so you can just pretend you work there.
Okay, well, now this is just becoming like a heist movie. Not as having extra clothes and a setup. What do we have? A fall guy next? A greaser?
Yep.
Is this Ocean's Nine?
Yep. Just always have a mean friend and always have an apron and just have them keep yelling, corner, 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 and you're good. Okay, that's the show. We'll be back in your feed on Wednesday, so definitely subscribe. That way, you never miss an episode. Leave us a rating and a review in Apple or Spotify and tell your friends about us. You can follow us on Twitter at @ICYMI_pod. And you can always drop us a note at ICYMI@slate.com.
ICYMI is produced by Sarah Spragley-Ricks and Candace Lim, with production assistance from Alexandra Botti. Daisy Rosario is our senior supervising producer, and Alicia Montgomery is Slate's VP of Audio. See you online.
Or at Quality Meats.